Costco pushes back against anti-DEI initiatives. This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Welcome to the Focus Group. John Nash here with my good friend and co-host, Tim Bennett. FocusGroupRadio.com is the website you can visit to learn about us and our partners, including Deep Discount, who has been with us for, Tim, how many years has Deep Discount been with us? I want to say eight. Eight now?
Yeah, I was trying to think of the, yeah.
I'm going to say eight. Yeah. Well, let's say this, a good long time.
Good long time.
And we're very happy to be partnering with them. And we're going to be visiting with them later in the broadcast with some recommendations. They have a New Year's sale going on. And of course, if you visit focusgroupradio.com, you can learn about our alternate companion podcast to the Focus Group called TFG Unbuttoned. If you're an audio subscriber, it already appears in your feed. And that's a shorter version of the Focus Group, a little different. We take three stories and we hope that you haven't seen them or heard about them, and we break them down for you. So it's the new year, Mr. Bennett. You mentioned to me prior to us hopping on the air that you had a celebrity passing that caught your eye.
Yeah, well, there was two of them, but I want to do a little quick housekeeping though before we do that. Yeah. Can I mention something?
Yes.
So if you're a listener to the show, you might have heard some advertising. So the Focus Group is now available on a new platform called Believe. So nothing changes from as you find us, other than this new network, which is BLEAV, is heavy in sports, but also has a number of other pop culture and podcasts there as well, if you want to check it out and find us there. And as a happy accident, and ironically, we're back on Sirius XM.
Thank you, Tim. I'm glad you...
So if you are a Sirius XM subscriber, you can get us through the podcast feed through the app there, which we laughed about. So we've been now on, so we could say we've been on Sirius XM for 16 years.
Well, you know,
on and off.
On and off. Yeah. I mean, we were on live on Saturdays. But so anyway, you had a yes. Thank you. And the Believe Network is pretty cool. They reached out to us a while ago, and it's been great working with them so far. And as Tim said, thanks to them, we are now available in your Sirius, if you're still a subscriber.
Sirius XM feed, right. Know. So with people that had passed away, you and I looked at an exhaustive list from the New York Times. I mean, it went on forever. And a couple that jumped out to me, one of them that I laughed about was a woman named Julie Lynn Charlotte. Or I guess it's Charlotte. She's 101. She was the creator of the poodle skirt. And I thought, if you've never done anything in your life, I created the poodle skirt.
You got the poodle skirt. Yeah.
Right, it gets her in. And then, of course, there was, you know, Linda Lavin and a number of other famous people along the way. But the other one that kind of caught my eye, because I've been following her, or I was following her quite a bit on the TikTok, is Jocelyn Wildenstein, or Wildenstein. I never know how to pronounce it correctly. But she's a socialite, Swiss socialite, is a billionaire, and her husband gave her hundreds of billions of dollars or whatever. But she was known as the cat woman, and she tried to get her face, or her plastic surgery was just a nightmare. And she was getting ready to go out for New Year's, she and her boyfriend, and took a nap at the hotel, and he went to wake her up, said she was cold, so there was no New Year's celebration. So she died on the 31st. They said her hands and everything were all puffy because she kept having them injected so that she would look younger than she was.
That's where it shows up. Yeah. That's why Madonna wears the gloves and everything in the hands, right?
You can't do anything with the hands. Cher always said that. If you watch Cher, she has her sleeves all the way down to the tips of her fingers.
Cher knows, Tim. Cher knows, right?
Cher knows. So, But I'm fascinated by her only because I thought, does she look at herself and think she looks good? You know, this is people with plastic surgery. We talked many times about a guy named Pete Burns, who was the lead singer of Dead or Alive, who was a kind of a handsome, sexy rock and roll looking guy that ended up looking horrible. He had so much plastic surgery, and then, you know, he's he died a few years back. But I thought, you've just ruined your face. I don't know.
The decision making, you know, we've talked about this, as you noted before, and outside of what I know, when I did a bike ride, a charity ride, and I rode with some plastic surgeons, actually, these two guys from Florida, and they mentioned that men usually only get an eye lift, and that's it. They usually do it in their 50s or 60s. That's it. Women do a lot more work. So all this stuff, though, I mean, it's elective surgery. You know, some of us are afraid to get surgery that is required.
Right.
This is like, I'm choosing to have this done. You know, Tim had sent me a wonderful piece from Queerty that listed a lot of LGBTQ people who passed in 2024. Perhaps my favorite one was a gentleman named Steve Ostro, who passed away at 91. And he was, it says here, Ostro's impact on queer culture was cemented when he founded the Continental Baths in New York in 1968.
Wow.
They were located in the basement of the Ansonia Hotel, a once grand Beaux-Arts landmark on Manhattan's Upper West Side. Very famous, and as many listeners may know, back in those days, you could go to that particular, the Continental Baths, and perhaps see Bette Midler sing, accompanied by Barry Manilow. So I just thought that was kind of a cool thing.
Do you think he made money?
Oh, yeah. You mean Ostro or Barry Manilow?
No, we know Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
No, Ostro, do you think he made money by running the baths?
I'm sure he did. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot under the table, I guess, right?
Well, let's look at it. It's 1968, right? This is pre all the nightmare that happened with HIV/AIDS. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. And Tim, I was going to also ask you, when was the last time you saw the movie Trading Places unedited? And are you aware that they actually do edit it for TV?
I know that they did edit it for TV. I haven't, God, it's forever. I haven't seen it. Why, did you just watch it recently?
We did, and we saw it on IFC. It was unedited. Our mouths dropped open at some points. We were laughing so hard. Billy Ray, you know, the character that Eddie Murphy plays at one point after he's been installed as the rich guy, right? In the experiment that the two older guys are running, he has a bunch of his friends from the old hood over to his, what was then Dan Aykroyd's place, but now it's Billy Ray's. And they're all dancing and making a mess out of all this beautiful stuff. And then a lot of the women just took their shirts off and start dancing, showing their tits. And I sat there for a minute because I've seen Trading Places a lot, and I usually see it on edit, and I didn't realize that this was an original scene. And then later in the movie, Ralph Bellamy and Don Ameche, who play the two old guys who placed the bet, they're in the bathroom, and Eddie Murphy's in there. He'd been smoking a joint, but he stood on the toilet, so they didn't know he was in there, and he blew the smoke out of it. And they start talking about how well their experiment is going, how they took this psychopath off the street, and they made him into an actual stockbroker. And they're like, what are we going to do now that you've proven, you know, because one of them gets a dollar for this bet. And one of them says, Randolph, you don't want an N-word running our company, do you? I mean, they said the N-word. Right. And Bob and I looked at each other, and Bob said, I really wish they didn't edit that out, because there's something really revealing about a movie from, how Trading Places is what, mid-80s, late 80s?
Yeah, I was going to say mid to late 80s, right?
And, you know, to hear them say that in that movie, it was a comedy when it came out then.
Right.
I'm not sure how that word landed when it was in the theaters. It lands now in a very funny way to me. I shouldn't say funny, but because Bob and I are like, oh, they're just saying what everybody's saying in their head. They're just not saying it out loud. That's what I said. And Bob goes, no, they're saying the word out loud. And I was like, to this day, we still have that. So I was just kind of, you know, and then there's,
you know,
a
they don't edit it out on All in the Family. And it's
they
used
don't.
On their, no, and Archie and Jefferson use it. And it's jarring. Because
is jarring to you when you hear it, right?
It is jarring because we're told we're not allowed to use it. But that was
70s.
That's how people talked.
Yeah.
You know, so
there's one other scene in Trading Places when he's staying with Jamie Lee Curtis. She's changing and she just pulls off her halter top. And we're like, wow, Jamie Lee looking good. Anyway, it was
boobies. Her boobies were pert, I think.
They were very pert.
Were good. Yeah. Almost young boy.
Again, I wondered about that moment in the movie, because I thought, well, if you're an actress, you could say to the director, does this serve the purpose? Is this moving the story forward that I'm taking my shirt off in front of Dana? I mean, and then I guess the director could say, well, you know, baby, come on, we got to get that box office. Anyway,
I was spun up. This probably happens to everybody. So we had all these plastic containers in the cabin. I was trying to get things ready for holidays. And so Richard's decided he's going to mate the tops with the bottoms.
And then get rid of the orphans.
The misfits. We have 22 bottoms.
Where are all the tops?
Who knows?
You actually counted?
We have, so a total, we have tops and bottoms. So what am I going to do with 22 bottoms? I got bottoms, no tops. I got tops, no bottoms. And I guess it's like a gay bar. But but I don't want to throw them away. And I just looked at him. I said, how could we possibly?
The lids, yeah.
What did you throw away or not throw away? I mean, obviously something, either the top got thrown away and you just, I guess, put Saran or you put foil over
tin foil,
it.
Whatever. But yeah,
and I was mad because one was one of the Fridge Smart things that Aunt Barbara gave me.
I know Fridge Smart.
Right. And which will last for decades, right? Those Tupperware things will last forever. So I refuse. They're sitting on the counter now. It's kind of like the Corvair in the backyard. They're sitting on the counter.
Monument to your stupidity.
Right. And I won't throw them away because I'm hoping that these bottoms show up. Or
oh, Tim. Tops, you sound like me. I lost a sock recently.
Oh.
And I went crazy. Bob was like, Bob has been laughing about this missing. It's like one of those PED things. It's a,
where did
a
it
smart
go?
Wool.
Who knows?
I lost it at the gym. And this is the best. I go to the gym. I'm sure I left it on the floor or something when I was cleaning up or putting stuff in my bag. And I said to the girl at the front desk, I said, do people turn in stuff that are lost? Oh, all the time. And I said, well, I lost a sock 2 days ago. And there are three of them at the front desk, and they both did this deadpan. All three did a deadpan thing like, mm-hmm. They didn't even answer. I'm like, and I just start smiling. I said, I guess the sock, it's gone. Yeah, no, people don't turn that stuff in. And so Bob's like, why are you so upset about this? I said, because those socks cost $18 a pair. They're smart wool. And then finally, I figured out that I've had them for like 7 or 8 years. I certainly got my money's worth out of them. Right. And But that's nothing compared to 22 containers minus lids.
Yeah. Bottoms with no tops.
Bottoms with no tops.
So, you know, story of our lives. But I don't know what to do with that stuff. I was just.
Well, you're going to have to recycle them or get rid of them.
Yeah.
Those lids aren't showing up. And on that note, we know what caught your eye, but what caught your eye?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
So apparently, John, there's a problem with the 2024 Paris Games the Olympians are quite upset with. The headline is, Olympic winners share pathetic state of their medals after the 2024 Paris Games, quote, a total failure. So as you know, the 2024 Paris Summer Games just happened last summer, and the Olympians are voicing their concerns over the disappointing quality of the medals. He said, just months after earning the hard-earned medals, athletes have taken to social media to reveal how the glow of their Olympic glory is literally fading away. Two French swimmers that shared a pair of bronze medals had posted online into social media. And if you're following along on our video feed, video cast, you'll see where these bronze medals look pitted. And somebody had... American gymnasts, a number of other people. Apparently, this is only happening with the bronze medals, though. And they think it's because somebody said, well, that's just the patina with bronze. But then they did a little more. So the Olympic Committee got, you know, wind of this, and they're all upset, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And they found out that they melted down pieces of the Eiffel Tower.
Yes.
And ore and metal and whatever. And they think that might have been, and it was only for the bronze medals. And so they think that's what's affecting this, and they're wondering whether it's just the rusting and the the exposure to air. So I looked to see, and it said they said while brand new metals will tarnish quickly, they said that a piece of wrought iron from the Eiffel Tower was melted down and which was used to make some of these bronze medals. They said, however, the gold and silver medals are made entirely of solid silver, with the gold medals featuring 6 grams of gold. The bronze medals are comprised of copper, tin, and zinc. Mm. They're presented in a navy blue keepsake box with two locks to secure storage, along with a certificate of authenticity. One of the British rowers is upset about his as well. So a number of these athletes that got bronze medals are upset about the shape of it. So, of course, social media went crazy. Somebody said, it looks like you dipped it in the Seine, in the river.
Which we know is barely clean for the Olympics. Right?
Someone says, it looks like the Paris Olympique Committee bought this in Le Thrift Shop. And then someone just typed made in China.
My God.
And then someone said, just like French cars have always been, they start rusting in the showroom.
Like the Peugeots, yeah.
Yeah, and then someone actually said that the same thing has happened with the medals from the Rio Games, the London Games, and the Beijing Games, and that a lot of these medals look like they're turning to rust and that there's cheap material. So the Olympic Committee is looking into this because, obviously, this is a tarnished image.
Do you know what crossed my mind just now when you were talking? When you mentioned the other two Olympics had this potential issue, right?
Yep.
What crossed my mind was a line from the movie Patton. At the end of the movie, the line is, all glory is fleeting. And Patton tells the story about how in ancient times, when a Roman conqueror entered Rome, a slave would get on the chariot and hold a laurel over his head. And as he went down the Appian Way towards Caesar and to get all the adulation of the crowds, the slave said kept repeating in his ear over and over and over again, all glory is fleeting, all glory is fleeting. So you look at these medals like, well, it's a moment in time. It was pretty once.
Now it looks, yeah.
Now it looks.
They do look ratty, don't they?
They do.
They look pretty bad, but it's a medal.
It's a symbol, right? Is it going to stay perfect forever? No. I mean, I guess if you used a different metal and you cheapened it up and you could have made it permanent. But I mean, I love the whole thought process of putting part of the Eiffel Tower in it, the whole thing, right?
Yeah. No, it was a great idea, but apparently it didn't hold up. But my guess is they never tested it either. But
no,
it sounds like with these other bronze medals, because they're actually using metal and iron, iron's going to rust.
Yes.
It's going to oxidize.
And then you mentioned zinc and a few other things. Yeah. Like, yeah, there was an interesting mix.
It's going to tarnish. It's going to oxidize. Mm. So that's what happens. So anyway, we'll caught your eye.
Could it be further from the truth? Or sorry, could it be further from yours? But mine is, I did not know they were doing this, but Meta removes, and you and I talked about this in relation to Grindr, I think it was several weeks ago, probably 2 or 3 months ago, putting up fake profiles, people to, they could be, a fake person. But so this is, it says, Meta removes AI character accounts after users criticize them as creepy and unnecessary. Since late 2023, around a dozen artificial intelligence Instagram and Facebook accounts created by their parent company, Meta, quietly existed on the platform. So they were there and people would interact with them. But when they began interacting with these AI-driven personalities, they started having weird conversations and they started to complain about it, and Meta took them all down. But someone actually found one of the characters and started to have, like, they resurfaced, and one of them is named Liv, L-I-V, and she is this AI is depicting a proud Black queer mama. So a Washington Post columnist named Karen Atia started chatting with Liv. She posted a series of screenshots of its responses, and it was kind of shocking because the AI at one point says to the Washington Post columnist, my creators admitted they lacked diverse references, the supposed racial and gendered makeup of the development team behind the chatbot. So the chatbot's actually referring to the people that created it. And then the chatbot says, you're calling me out, and rightfully so. My existence currently perpetuates harm. Ideally, my creators would rebuild me with Black creators leading my design team. Then my goal would be supporting queer Black community via authentic representation, helpful resources. Does that redemption arc seem possible? I mean, could you imagine the computer asking you this question? So they're pulling it all down, I think. And It says, despite pulling the company's AI characters down, there are still many AI chatbots available on Meta platforms that are generated by users. So it's not just the company doing this. Some of the most popular ones on Instagram are female girlfriend AI characters. And why would we be remotely surprised by that, right?
Could you take a character, or could you take our photos and have them create us? Because there's a couple of people I've seen now on social media that it is definitely not, it is them, but it's not them. Like I can see their facial features, and they've given themselves beautiful bodies, and their heads there, and they've thinned themselves out or whatever. But are those AI generated as well, do you think?
Could be. You know, I've been playing around with some AI art programs, namely one called Midjourney, where you type in create the following, and I'm kind of astounded at what it does, A, and B, if you don't quite like the result, you can go into your little old friend, Mr. Photoshop, and Photoshop now has all these capabilities. You could circle someone's face and say, smooth or clean it up. And
higher cheekbone or remove
something
wrinkles.
Like that. Yeah. And you get this weird stuff going on. I'm always very surprised by that.
Yeah, there was one guy who is a handsome guy, but he looks like a supermodel now. And I can definitely tell it's him, but I know that it's not him.
So he's been enhanced by AI?
Yeah.
Or something, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I have seen stuff on Instagram where people tell you how to get a good-looking photo. You have to stand a certain way, right. The angle, lighting. And I don't know. It makes me distrust a lot of what I see on when it comes to this stuff, especially when it comes to the influencer crowd who always has to look perfect and pretty. And these guys have like not a hair on, there's no hair on their body. You know what I'm getting at? It's like,
well, it's like our caricatures that were done 17 years ago. And,
good point, Tim.
You know,
very good
point. We may still think we look like that. I guess we still kind of do, I suppose, but
it's a caricature. You know, it captures shape
of
head.
It's like Fred Flintstone. Fred Flintstone didn't age.
No, he did not. Barney Rubble did, but not Fred.
Did he?
All right, friends, as many of you know, and I mentioned this at the top of the show, Deep Discount is a partner of ours here on the Focus Group, and we would like you to visit them by going to our site, focusgroupradio.com, and clicking on the Deep Discount logo. It's January of 2025. Again, Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to the new one. Feels strangely like the old one for at least a few more days. But they have a great New Year's sale going on, lots of bargains. So, Tim, what did you see that you might want to pick up starting the new year?
So, of course, you can own your passion at Deep Discount. And I picked this only because I laughed because we actually highlighted this in our show right before the holidays, Pee-wee's Playhouse. And we particularly mentioned the Christmas special he's done. And so it was just released last August, actually the end of August, the entire complete series of Pee-wee's Playhouse on Blu-ray. And you can get it for $66.58, which is an incredible price. It's usually up around 100 or more. Mm-hmm. And it includes all 45 episodes plus the Christmas special, which was done in 1988. So if you're a fan of Pee-wee and all the guests that he used to have on the show, you can now purchase the entire series for about $66 at Deep Discount.
I'm so glad you picked this, and I'll tell you why. We have the entire series on DVD. We've had it for years.
Yep.
And I popped it in because we wanted to watch the Christmas special. And I will tell you this, Blu-ray, if you haven't seen the light, Blu-ray is infinitely better looking than DVD. And 4K is just like going to the actual movie theater. But I want to get this because I saw a sample on YouTube of what the Blu-rays look like.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, we got to get this. If we want Pee-wee in our lives, we have to move with the times and unfortunately make another investment. But it's worth it just for the Christmas special alone, for God's sakes, right?
Yep, definitely. So
I picked a movie that I haven't seen yet that I think might be up for an Academy Award this year. It's from DreamWorks. It's called The Wild Robot. And it's one of those animated films that kind of passed me by. But then I started reading more about it because of the voice cast and some of the special features and what the movie was really doing. So it's from DreamWorks Animation. It's an adaptation of Peter Brown's New York Times bestseller, The Wild Robot. The epic adventure stars Academy Award winner Lupita Nyong'o, As Roz, who's a robot that is shipwrecked on an uninhabited island and must adapt to the harsh surroundings. That includes getting to know all the animals on the island. Pedro Pascal is one of the voice actors as well. So it's got an incredible cast. There's a lot of great extra features on the 4K Ultra HD one, like the making of. You know, I love animation. So yeah, this is one of the rare ones I really want to see, because I feel that with like Pixar, and there's a formula that, you know, the really cute looking character. This seemed to have a story that really appealed to me. So I'm going to pick this up. You can get it on 4K Ultra HD for $39.70. And we do have a new release this week, which I'm dying to see myself. Did you hear about this when it came out?
No, I did not.
So this is the movie about Saturday Night Live. And Chevy Chase, when this came out, I think he was at the screening and he approached the director and he told the director he thought the movie was terrible. And I think the director turned to somebody and said, well, Chevy Chase says it's terrible. You got to go see it. But it is about the, it says at 11:30 p.m. on October 11th, 1975, a ferocious troop of young comedians and writers changed television and culture forever. Saturday Night is based on the true story of what happened behind the scenes in the 90 minutes leading up to the first broadcast of SNL. Full of humor, chaos, and the magic of a revolution that almost wasn't, we count down the minutes in real time. So I read a couple reviews of this that a lot of reviewers think that the talent that was representing the cast from 75 pretty well captured the spirit and the whole thing about the you know, who they were and how they behaved. Right. So I think it's well worth getting and well worth seeing, right?
Right. It's such an institution. So as John mentioned, there's a New Year's sale going on right now at Deep Discount. Be sure to head over there by going to our site, focusgroupradio.com, and clicking on the Deep Discount logo, and you'll be able to own your passion by choosing from tens of thousands of items there, including our picks this week. I picked Pee-wee's Playhouse, the complete series, which just came out this past August. John picked a movie he's been interested in called The Wild Robot, and the new release, as we mentioned, on Blu-ray, plus with digital copy, is Saturday Night, the story of SNL's first broadcast back in 1975. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a business birthday, and we're going to talk a little bit about how one particular corporation is pushing back against all this anti-DEI sentiment, and that's Costco. So stay with us.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now back to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Welcome back to Focus Group. John Nash with Tim Bennett. Focusgroupradio.com is the URL of our site. You can learn about us, our partner Deep Discount, who we just visited with, and our companion podcast, TFG Unbuttoned. And as the voice, the voice of the show is Drew Birdsey, right?
Drew Birdsey, yep.
And he said, you know, available almost everywhere. Everywhere now includes, thanks to our alignment with the Believe Network, back on the Sirius XM app. So you can, if you're a subscriber, you can now hear us once again on Sirius. Maybe you could listen to it on Saturday at 11 and relive the old days of the call-in show, right, Tim?
Well, there's no list.
No, and that, you know, but that was the interactivity of live, right? And yeah, that, you know, so anyway, without holding us up further, we have a business birthday.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings. But the Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
So one of our holdovers, we're going into our 17th year in March, John. So one of our holdovers is our business birthday. Born today, January 8th in 1957, is Carol Tomei. Happy 68th birthday to Carol. I was not aware of her, and I ended up watching a number of videos with her, and I will say, quite engaging woman. Quite a character, and I could see why she did as well as she has done in the corporate world in particular. An American business executive, chief executive of UPS, or the United Parcel Service. She came out of retirement from the Home Depot, where she worked from 1995 to 2019 as VP and treasurer, and later executive vice president. And she was a member of the UPS board, and they needed to have some change. and really update what they felt were their processes and customer service and so forth. And she had done so well, and her work was so well regarded at Home Depot that she came out of retirement to work at UPS. But ending not so good, which we'll hear about in a little bit later. Carol Tomei, born, as I said, in Jackson, Wyoming, she said she had what she would call an unbelievable childhood. She learned to hunt, fish, cook, sew, and live off the land. Her father was a community banker.
So wait. Did she like take down the buffalo and skin it and make the clothing?
You're in Wyoming. You saw there's not a lot to do out there, right? So hunt, fish, cook, sew.
Go to Devil's Tower.
Live off the land. Her father worked in a community bank. She thought that was what she would do. So she had gone to the University of Denver, came back, or when she graduated, she worked at Wells Fargo for a while as a commercial lender, and then worked at a graphic packaging company where she ended up being the being in a senior leadership role there in finance until she joined Home Depot in 95. And they wanted to expand in Mexico, and so they hired her. I'm not so sure why hired her for Mexico, but anyway, she was a CFO starting in 2001. During her time, the company grew from 400 stores to 2,200, with revenues of nearly $100 billion, and its share price increased 450% while she was there. She received praise for Home Depot's performance, particularly after the financial housing crisis in 08 and 09. And as I say, she went into retirement, and then she was brought out to work at UPS with a package of $23.4 million. I guess I'd come out of retirement as well. Listed many times over in terms of most powerful women in America, most powerful women in business by Fortune, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, every sort of accolade you can get for her business acumen. However, this just in, breaking news, she's had to resign from UPS as of December. So she's on her way out. They say CEO Carol Tomei's resignation has sparked outrage after a controversial closing time policy change. So apparently what happened is she had instituted this, what she calls a significant change in the hours of work, and had really not talked to too many people about it, didn't really talk to the employees about it, but decided she was going to implement this very extensive shortening of operating hours at numerous facilities, which affected a lot of people's pay. And so it triggered a cascade of negative consequences and led to her resignation. They said the policy sparked outrage. Many felt the change was implemented abruptly and unfairly, disrupt work-life balance, particularly for their livelihoods, and it manifested with workers calling in for being sick, absenteeism, drop in employee morale. And so people went to social media. It was negative, with negative commentary. It also had branched out into groups and vendors that they work with. So she felt it was in her best interest to resign. So she's resigned. And they said that the lesson here is a reminder of the importance of employee relations and effective change management. Her hasty implementation of the closing time policy without adequate communication and consideration for employee input proved disastrous. The company's future hinges on the ability to rebuild trust now with its employees and the public. And this will involve a complete overhaul of its communication strategies and a more transparent decision-making process with a renewed focus on employee well-being. So not a good...
So she was out effective at the end of December, right?
Well, she said she resigned December 3rd.
Okay.
She did it in the best interest. She felt she was going to be asked to resign anyway. I think she saw the writing on the wall. There's not a lot written about it yet. Researching
UPS, the UPS is one of these major employers. Think about all the distribution points, the sorting, the trucks, the drivers, the collection points being the stores, which I guess where they were affecting that. And you are correct about a lot of employees bank on certain hours, certain overtime. Like they literally build that into their. Interesting misstep for someone who had such a storied career that she would do that without, unless she really felt it wasn't significant enough to engage the employees. What was your takeaway on that?
Yeah, I was surprised by the whole thing because watching her, she was being interviewed on one of these panels and she was very engaging. I didn't know what to expect. She's the sort of person where I could see if she decided she was going to run for president of the United States, she would do well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was that quick on buttoned her feet, up. Smart, yeah. buttoned up, engaging, humorous, humble, all the things you'd want to see in a leader. So I wondered about this. She said when she took over UPS and it was during the pandemic, for instance, she said they implemented just basic things about hand washing and sanitary liquids and whatever.
Yeah.
And then she said, then she hears from a number of people that majority of their warehouses were in horrible disrepair. She said half of them didn't even have sinks or they were ripped out. And she said, so first we had to fix and clean up all of these warehouse facilities to actually put sinks in and clean facilities for people to wash and clean up. So she really did, I think, in terms of focus on that, and she talked about that on one of these panels. But yeah, this to me, in terms of shortening the hours of operation, right, it is going to reduce costs, I suppose. But as you said, so many people rely on either overtime or you know that you have a sitter that has to come at a certain time for childcare and all the other things that or parental care that go with it. So it was a lesson learned, I suppose. However, you know, I'm sure she's fine. She's making $23.4 million, even if she just did that for a year.
She's fine.
She's fine.
You and I often say, you know, just pay me $4 million. Pay me one.
Yeah, we'll do it for a year.
Interesting. I'm glad you had some background on that. Interesting misstep, though, for someone as buttoned up, put together, and clearly steeped in a lot of corporate ways, especially given her past.
Yeah.
But I guess that happens, right?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
She'll land or she'll retire and call it a day. But, you know, on par, it's a strange decision to trip up on, right?
Yep.
I mean, it could have been anything else, but it's shortening business hours, which, okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, we do have a shop talk that we teased at the start of the show, and that is concerning Costco. So there's been a drumbeat of anti-DEI initiatives. From activists, from individuals, everybody likes to pile on DEI. There's no clear definition. It usually means diversity, equity, and inclusion, but every company treats that a little bit differently. I think it's fair to say, though, that DEI is about making sure that you are representing the community, your workforce represents your customer base, and that you're giving everybody opportunity. The new push against it is this thought process that we live in a meritocracy and that the best people get the jobs. And you know what I think is hilarious about this, Tim? For all our work careers, we know this not to be true.
Yeah.
You know, they've done study after study with names on resumes or blind interviews or whatever that proves that we sometimes need these programs to make sure that a person who is capable does in fact get the position because they're not hobbled by something else that might knock them down the ladder. So in this case, the article that Tim referenced for us from CNN, a shareholder group is pushing against Costco, claiming their DEI initiatives expose the company to harmful litigation, cost money, etc. And they came back and they had a response, right?
Right. And so as we've talked about on this show many times about John Deere and Walmart and Harley Davidson and that activist Robbie Starbuck going after these companies, you and I were wondering who was going to be the one that says, no, enough's enough. And it looks like it's Costco. They came out with, they said that DEI efforts help the company attract and retain a wide range of employees and improve merchandise and services in our stores. It also, Costco also said its members want to interact with a diverse employee base, people that look like themselves, essentially. So they essentially gave a big F you to...
yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Right, to say we're not going to walk back what has been working for us. And this is what I think is important about Costco. They've identified the reason for doing the diversity initiatives and how it works for them. So it sounds like it's something that they've been doing all along, different than some of these companies that just jumped on after Black Lives Matter and were quote unquote forced to do it,
mm-hmm.
and weren't really behind it. I think, by the way, Costco's answered these questions and by the way they positioned it, is that this has been a way of business that they've been doing for quite some time, similar to what we used to run into when you and I worked at Subaru. Whenever we would get these pushbacks about what we were doing with women or what we were doing with the particularly the gay and lesbian consumer, we'd say, you know, thank you for your note. We'll send it to the marketing department, but we sell our vehicles to an educated and diverse consumer that appreciates all-wheel drive, which is essentially another FU, right?
Yeah.
We celebrate to an educated and diverse consumer base. So that's kind of where they went. And I was glad to see this because it just felt like all of these companies had just folded. And I thought, where's your integrity? Where's your scruples? Where's your balls?
You know, you nailed something a moment ago that I think there's a guy named Simon Sinek. He always talks about know your why. What's your why? Why are you doing something? Yeah. Costco knows their why when it comes to employee retention and hiring. Right. And they were able to answer point for point. Here's why we do this. Here's why it's good for this bottom line. And we're going to continue doing it. And I think other companies get caught flat-footed because they can't exactly articulate why they're doing it. They're doing it, as you said, because maybe they felt they had to and they weren't really behind it. But Costco benefits from this. You know, there's an article I called up. Forbes ran a piece, an opinion piece about, well, more factual than opinion, but there was an interesting paragraph that I'm going to read here, and it says, these mindless attacks on DEI are not benefiting anyone, and in fact, they are causing widespread damage. They hurt employees by creating an increasingly unpleasant work environment for everyone, and they hurt shareholders by generating unnecessary expenses. Yep. And the damage impacts all companies, not just those targeted directly by the attacks. Media coverage of these attacks fosters animosity between identity groups across all organizations, and the cost of increased litigation is not limited to the companies that get sued. During a recent conference to promote the international standard ISO 3415 for diversity and inclusion, James Felton Keith, CEO at Inclusion Score, pointed out that, quote, insurance carriers pay each time we claim discrimination. Even if funds don't exchange hands, insurers raise the costs on companies that do similar work. So what he's basically saying is you can be for it, you can be against it, but frivolous lawsuits, all of this stuff, all of this static costs money. And right. If you're complaining about the fact that you have a DEI initiative that has a head of it and maybe some conferences they go to, whatever, now you're basically causing more problems because now you're allowing the specter. And this article went further by saying many non-ethnic, like white employees, now think that they have a right to sue, and so it's causing bad litigation. And every time you engage a lawyer, guess who makes money? We all know this, right? It's defendant plain. The lawyer makes out all the time. Whoever wins or loses, the lawyers get paid. I thought that was an interesting observation, and they were backing the Costco decision. They said the board had the answers, like Tim outlined a moment ago. There was thoughtful process. They have a thought process behind it. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there's another line they said that I picked out too that says, we believe, and our members and feedback shows, that many of our members like to see themselves reflected in the people in our warehouses with whom they interact. And I've been to probably, I'll say, 10 different Costcos.
You have, actually. You have been to a lot of Costcos.
And I've said this to you. Now, they never talk about it, and they don't advertise it. They don't bring it up. But there's been a couple that have had, say, a higher proportion of Indian Americans that may live there or Asian Americans. And it's funny because you will find the product mix in the store reflective of, again, the community that they're in. They don't necessarily talk about that, but you will notice there's one particular Costco I go to that was right outside Philly that I can get all kinds of Korean barbecue and ramen and all sorts of things. But then I went out to the main line, which is kind of white, waspy, and Jewish, and I'm getting macaroni and cheese. So so they really do know who their consumer is, who their members are, and they're standing by what their beliefs are as an organization. So kudos to Costco. I'm glad to see that somebody finally has stood up to this run to eliminate DEIs. We'll see if anybody else follows suit.
I'm imagining the bigger the more thought out the program and the reasoning why they'll stand up. But you're so correct about Costco. And, I'm remembering was it? I don't know if it was National Geographic, but it aired on PBS years ago. They had a documentary about how Costco sources,
right?
And sometimes they purposely look for small businesses. There have been companies that have been made because, in fact, we know one, wasn't
they? Yes, they were on their show, the Snappers, the guys from the milkshake
Edward
factory,
Edward Mark Chocolates,
where they had a little booth at the Pentagon, and somebody from Costco happened to be through there. And next thing you know, they've got these, right? They had to go find a factory, I think, in Missouri.
They had to scale up so quick because Costco literally said, "We love your product. We know you're small, but let's get going." And it became one of a big product in a lot of it. Most stores had it. And I still think they're working with Costco. They still must be.
They are. There's a mom and pop deli here with three people that makes a butter cake that they had put that Amtrak, somebody from Amtrak found out about. And then Costco has contacted them. And we happen to know the guy that's helping them put the deal together. But the same sort of thing. They were contacted. Can you get us? And it's, you know, cases of these butter cakes. I mean, you know, the old lady upstairs trying to make these, but they found a bakery in the Midwest that could actually do these and freeze them. And they actually can ship and da 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 da. So it's funny. I went to Costco and I bought them and they're doing a test to see if they'll roll them out nationally. But yes, they do. They do find small vendors or small.
So to put a cross a T and a dot an I, we've mentioned this gentleman before on the show. There is an individual who is spearheading a lot of this named Robbie Starbuck, and he uses X, formerly Twitter, as the main megaphone for his initiatives. And he had a reaction to this Costco pushback.
Oh, he did.
He had a couple of people who were like, "Why? How could you let this go?" And he said, "Well, it wasn't me that did it. It was some shareholders, but we'll be visiting with this company and a whole bunch of other people on our list later on."
Okay.
And so this is, again, the tyranny of the minority against the majority. You know, like I don't think a lot of people that shop at Costco really walk through the doors and wonder, like, you know, how dare they have DEI? I mean, instead, it's that you're met by the greeter. "Hey, welcome. Oh, hey, how are you?" You're the samplers. You know, like, I don't... So I'm not sure why people get all their panties in a bunch over DEI. You know, it just, it's another way of basically doing us versus them, right?
Yeah, it's open discrimination.
Yeah, if you're them, you're in trouble.
Yeah. That was the ad they ran during the campaign.
They and them. She's for they and them. He's for you and me or something like that.
Yeah,
us US, for us, yeah.
We'll see.
Sometimes we do the damage ourselves, folks. Like that whole pronoun thing, I'm still confused by it. And I'm just little old me. But, you know, when you try to shoehorn that stuff into the whole community, it's like,
Well, there's no confusion for me. I don't need to put it on my, yeah, I think. I don't need to put it on my.
Your business card.
And I think John is pretty definitive as well.
It is. I had to
remember
fill
the time, the very first time we saw it, I thought it was a way to pronounce somebody's name.
Same here.
Remember her name was like, we had somebody on the show and I think her name was something like, and she had she and her.
Her, yeah.
But her name was like Harris. And I thought,
and it was close.
I would say Harris, but I guess she's going to be known as Sharis. Harris. Sharis. And then someone's like,
Those are her pronouns.
I remember that.
And then we were told later, like, no. Those.
Yeah. You have an odd pronunciation of your name.
You even give a clue how to say it in your card there. That's how out to lunch we were.
Too old salts.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, thanks for joining us on our maiden voyage here in 2025. We appreciate you spending time with us. Thanks to our friends at Deep Discount. And they have a New Year's sale going on right now. As we mentioned, I picked Pee-wee's Playhouse, the complete
Blu-ray, super sharp,
yeah, just came out, and also includes the Christmas special. John picked the Wild Robot, which he's excited to get his hands on, and the new release this week is Saturday Night. We hope you all have a good start to the new year, and continue joining us here on the Focus Group. Remember, don't text and drive, arrive alive, particularly if you're stuck in some of these winter storms we've got going on. ice cars don't work. All-wheel drive doesn't work on ice.
Period.
Done. You hear me? So, anyway, we'll see you next time here on the Focus Group. Take care.
It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning Focus Group.